Well, good evening, everybody. I'm so excited to be here, to get to be with you, and to get to speak the Word of God to you. This is a very special church, as Mark has so beautifully and eloquently explained for you. I've been coming for a long time for youth lectures. It's meant a lot to me in my childhood. In fact, I was telling some of the other individuals, I think it's been about 12 or 13 years since I've last been in this pulpit. On Saturday afternoons, you used to have the availability for the young men to get up and to lead a song or two. Getting to do that as a young man was very special and helped build a lot of confidence for that. So thank you for those opportunities and the ones you provide going forward. I also want to say thank you to the elders for two things. One, the opportunity to come tonight and to speak, but also to say a special thank you to them for hosting the Westside Preaching Conference that they put together every year and giving us, Mark, that chance. I've been able to come for the last, I think, 3 years, 4 years of that, and that has been so important and impactful in my life and building myself up as a preacher. Having Mark and other men who I definitely count as my mentors and guidance there, the fact that you give them to us for that is just so important. So thank you. Please continue to provide that. It means the world to all of us who get to do that. It'll do you well to be in Hebrews chapter 6. Let's go ahead and open up to Hebrews chapter 6. So we'll be spending the beginning of our time tonight as we are looking at, I guess, the second of Satan's dirty dozen, some of his favorite tools to come and to get at us. Now, before I begin, I am going to throw up a picture on the screen. I don't want you to be scared. Please hold your gasps impossible, because here is the face, I think, that describes sloth as a whole. Well, it's on. There it is. It's our good friend, the sloth itself. I've been told that I'd be disappointing if I didn't throw a picture up. I've also been warned, don't talk too badly about them, because apparently Max's favorite creature of God's beautiful world is the sloth itself. And these guys, they are important. They are very important to the economy and the ecology that they are in. These little guys, they move at a certain pace, and they're given such a bad rep because of that, because they move with such speed, such elegance, such grace. The fact that they can grow lichen on their fur because they only move so many feet in a day. But I'll tell you this, if you ever watch or see a video of a sloth swimming, man, there's speed in those creatures. They don't want to be long in the water, but they move and move at a very intense and fast pace. You wouldn't think of them being defined as slow, gentle creatures. But this sin that has been tied to them in the name of sloth, it fits very aptly to the nature that they have, how slowly they move, the slow pace at which they participate in the world, the fact that they don't do a lot, the fact that they drop their infant. That infant is probably gone because they're never going to be able to get the protection of the parent offers. Imagine that as Satan's greatest tool, or one of his greatest tools. The fact that he can try to remove you from a protective bubble, a protective enforce, something that feeds you, nourishes you, keeps you warm, gives you the camouflage and protection of life away from the world and all those horrible things that can tear us away from God. He's doing everything he can to tear you away from that so he can claim you as your own. But you know, if you do a Google search, you'll see something interesting besides pictures of sloths thrown up. There's another big image you'll see when you type in the word sloth. And if you are familiar with, or your kids might be familiar with anime at all, there's actually two important characters that show up in two different TV shows that go with that. And when they're defined as sloth, they're given the name of sloth, these are not beings that are small and slow and insignificant. These characters are very strong, they're very powerful, they're very influential in the things that they do. They can change the world on a dime. It's interesting to see how other cultures view this idea of sloth, when the Bible describes it as just as powerful a force. Hebrews chapter 6, and start in verse 11. Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 11. If you do not have your Bibles, it's going to be up here on the board. But we passionately want each of you to demonstrate the same eagerness for the fulfillment of your hope until the end, so that you may not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and perseverance inherit the promises. When you look and see this verse and see that word sluggish that's thrown up there, it's another word for sloth, it's another word for laziness. Another word maybe we use is procrastination. But you see the words that are highlighted in yellow here that are counter words to them. These are words of action. These are words to go and to do what we passionately want each of you to demonstrate the same eagerness for the fulfillment of your hope until the end, so that you may not be sluggish, but imitators of those through faith and perseverance who inherit the promises. These are action words. I need you to passionately do these things. I need you to eagerly do these things. You are imitators. These are words of action that are not defined and characterized as sluggish or slow or slothfulness. In fact, another great example to see from that's found in our text is actually in Matthew 25. Turn over to Matthew chapter 25 with me for just a moment. We're going to look at a very specific parable that Jesus gives to us. And we'll be referencing this parable again a little bit later on. Matthew chapter 25, and start in verse 14. Matthew chapter 25, and in verse 14. It reads, "For it is like a man going on a journey who summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The one who received 5 talents went off right away and put his money to work, and gained 5 more. In the same way, the one who had gained 2 more, but the one who had received 1 talent went out and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money in it. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled his accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came and brought 5 more, saying, 'Sir, you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master answered, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You have been faithful in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' The one with 2 talents also came and said, 'Sir, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I have gained 2 more. And the master answered, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You have been faithful in a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' Then the one who had received the 1 talent came and said, 'Sir, I knew that you were a hard man, harvesting where you do not sow and gathering where you do not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours.' But his master answered, 'Evil and lazy slave. So you knew that I harvest where I do not sow and gather where I do not scatter. Then you should have deposited my money with the bankers, and on my return would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10. For the one who has will be given more, and he will have more than enough. But the one who does not have even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless slave into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." This is a very powerful, powerful parable when you tie it into this idea of slothfulness, of laziness, of procrastination. You can see quickly how the Lord sees the importance of working, going out and serving, and how he sees what it looks like and how he responds to when I choose to hide myself away. Maybe a better way to put this is for our modern times is to think of it in this case. You take your money and you've been saving up for retirement for so long. And you have an expectation, especially if you take all that money and invest it with someone else, that you are going to receive something more. You've invested for 30, 40, 50 years. You expect when it comes time to collect on this that you're going to have double, maybe even more. But the day you go to collect, there in the account sits the exact same amount that had been put in. How would you feel? How frustrated would you feel to see and know that you entrusted something so important, so precious to you, your future, and they did nothing with it? They wasted it because they were afraid to use it to spend it. Compare all that back to Hebrews chapter 6. Were they passionate? Was that last servant, that last slave that was there, passionate about serving his master? Was he eager to do that? Was he imitating his master at all? No, not at all. He hid the money away, doing the complete opposite of what his master would have done, because he was trying to protect himself, behaving very lazily, behaving very slothfully. Laziness and slothfulness is a real problem. It's one we don't like to admit and talk about. We just don't. This is a sin that we could easily say it's seldomly admitted or acknowledged by anybody in our society. It's interesting to hear how people brag about their work accomplishments, about saying, well, you know, I made all of this money this year. My bonus this year was $10,000. I gained this many clients. I sold this many of whatever product I am working for to sell. You never hear somebody braggadociously say, well, I hid myself away in the warehouse for 8 hours a day, every single day. You don't hear that. You might see it, but you never hear somebody brag about those things, because normally those people are fired and let go of, and they struggle to find work going forward because they are not seen as passionate, eager individuals, those who are imitating the ideals of the business. They are this sluggering kind of individual. Unfortunately, they are following in the nature of the sloth. Sloth is a sin that goes way beyond, though, the ideas of working an 8-to-5 job. While it can affect your work career very strongly, and I bet you know people that it does, this is what I'm talking about tonight, is a spiritual idleness that dulls our senses, that dulls my attention to God, and keeps me motionless as a Christian. It freezes me on my path, on my journey, where I'm not going anywhere forward, but I'm stuck. And if you're not going anywhere, you're actually going backwards, because everyone else is going somewhere else around you. That's not a good place to be. We really would become at that point Christian couch potatoes. And there's nothing good about a couch potato that have little or no impact on our physical and spiritual communities. This is a part of human sin and human nature that Satan loves to grab and hold on to, because it's seen as an innocent sin. My wife likes to call it the adorable sin of sloth, because it is. Look at that face. It's so adorable. It's so innocent. That coy little smile, the glimmer in its eyes. There's nothing evil inherently about a sloth. But if you're to take those characteristics and put them into your life, there's problems to come. Because it's not an innocent little sin. It's actually a great big beast that's going to tear down walls until you are absolutely defenseless. So tonight, while we have our time, I still want to go through. There's 7 things I want to identify and look at as warnings for us, and we'll wrap up with a few points of application. So the first thing, when I'm talking about these 7 dangers of sloth, the first one is simply this, is that sloth makes us avoid risk-taking. The nature of sloth makes us avoid risk-taking. If you look over at Matthew chapter 8, I'm going to be in Matthew chapter 8 for just a moment, you're going to see something the Lord has to say about this. Matthew chapter 8 and verse 18 through 22. Matthew chapter 8, starting in verse 18, says, "Now when Jesus saw a large crowd around him, he gave orders to go to the other side of the lake. Then an expert in the law came to him and said, 'Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go.' And Jesus said to him, 'Foxes have dens and the birds of the skies have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head.' Another disciple said to him, 'Lord, let me first go and bury my father.' But Jesus said, 'Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead.'" In this account, this story, you see that there are people who want to follow Jesus. They seem pretty eager to come and follow him. He's going across the lake. That's a journey. They might not fit in the boat. They're going to have to walk across to keep following him. It's not easy to walk across or around lakes. They seem eager to do it, but, and there's that important word, but. That's a key word to slothfulness, the word but. They have an excuse. I don't want to do this. I want to follow you, but I have something else that I have to do. Something else that's holding my attention back. Something else that's letting me avoid fulfilling myself 100% to you, Jesus. Slothfulness steals away this idea of being a risk taker. And I'm not talking about silly risk taking like skydiving, cliff jumping, things like that. I'm talking about these risks in our spiritual life that when I sit down at lunch with a coworker and say, "Hey, what'd you spend this Sunday doing? Did you go to church? What'd the preacher talk about? Oh, you missed it because of something else? Well, here, I can tell you at least what my preacher talked about, and maybe that can help you on this journey." Or the fact that somebody can see who you are as a Christian because I am living this certain way on this path. I am shining my light in this nature. And that sits out in a weird place. I know of individuals who, in their business world, were told you need to lie to the customers about all these processes, about what their actual expectations are going to be for the fulfillment of the work. You have to lie to them. I've known Christians who had to say, "I can't do that, I won't do that." Because that's not shining my light correctly. And unfortunately, they ended up having to find a new job. Because they took the risk in being a Christian and not being spiritually slothfulness. They took the risk. Slothfulness makes us avoid that thing. Secondly, about this, slothfulness does not fulfill our command to love our neighbor. Slothfulness prevents us from being neighborly individuals. Matthew chapter 22 and verses 37 through 39. Matthew 22, verses 37 through 39 says, Jesus said to them, "Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind." If you go over to Mark's account, he adds in strength there as well. He says, "This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself." All of the law and the prophets depend on these two commandments. If I am being a slothful individual, one who is spiritually lazy, who is holding myself back, even procrastinating a bit, I'm not fulfilling these commandments. They ask and say, "Who is my neighbor?" Well, Jesus says it's everybody, it's anybody who wants to come and know God. That is who my neighbor is. When I look at this idea of loving my neighbor, I got to remember, love takes real effort. Love is not just an emotion, it's not just a feeling. Love is action. Love is example. Love is doing. And if I'm not loving my neighbor in this correct and right way, I'm preventing something from being shown to them. If I'm being slothful, I'm not fulfilling my duties to the Lord. Because lazy people, lazy individuals, will not work to develop relationships. And they certainly won't work to heal a broken individual. It's not convenient for them. It's not comfortable for them. It's just easier to let it go and let somebody else do it. It really is. The temptation to do that so often is right there because it's the easy way out. And humans like taking the easy way. We really do. Thirdly, sloth does not develop its talents. Remember back at Matthew 25, it said, we're referencing it again, Matthew chapter 25, you look there at the servant who received the one talent. The New English translation, which I'm reading for, uses the word slave there. And I think that's a very appropriate and good word for that. Because these individuals were expected to work. They had the obligation and indebtedness to work for the master. We see two who go out and do the work. I would love to see that story flushed out to its fullness. I would love to see how the one who earned five got that five. Did he lose the previous five and earn 10 more? Did he wager in some ways or just work extra hard to get it? I would love to see the background of that story. But the important part of that parable to look at and see is how the lazy slave behaved. He took the talent, money at this point for us, we can define it as a gift that's been given to us. He took that and he buried it in the ground. He hid it away because it was going to be too much effort, too much work to try to develop that. Because he knows the master sows where he does not reap and he harvests what he did not plant. There was a risk. Who knew if he'd actually be able to love and work correctly? There's no love for the master there. only fear. And how does Jesus define and explain this individual? What did he describe him as? A wicked, lazy slave. If the Lord calls laziness, slothfulness as wicked, as evil, I think that's something we should keep our eyes open to and think about how I am behaving as a Christian. Am I being this kind of individual, a sloth who does not develop their talents appropriately? Fourthly, sloths avoid responsibility. Slothfulness, sloth individuals avoid responsibility. Look over at James chapter 4. James chapter 4 and verse 17. James 4 and verse 17. James 4 and verse 17. So whoever knows what is good to do and does not is guilty of sin. Anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins. That's another way to say that verse. I have an obligation to do the work, to do the responsibilities that have been given to me. Now, while I have a gift from the Lord, I think, to speak, I definitely have a gift to lead singing. That means that my gifts need to be used at the correct and opportunity time, right time. But it also means that I need to be working and developing these gifts, these responsibilities. While you may have one man that you have definitely identified as the best speaker that you have here, you pay that individual to do that. You may have the song leader that you know who is the very best, who you want up here as often as possible. That does not mean that any church does not have an obligation still to develop the responsibilities and talents of those coming up. It makes my heart glad to see young people getting up and speaking. While, yes, I can hear and see their knees shaking, it still makes my heart glad to see them do that. I feel so much more edified when I get to see a young person come up and lead singing for the first or second time in their life. Because they're trying to grow themselves. And to see how individuals come up and love on them, even when they mess up, telling them they do a great job, giving them all this encouragement, you are building these responsibilities, these talents up together. You have an obligation to build them up. A sloth avoids it, thinks somebody else can take care of that, somebody else is better at these things than me, and they leave those people alone when they really need it the most. A Christian cannot avoid responsibility, but sloth sure can. Slothfulness also fields this spectator mentality that, well, somebody else is going to do it. The word that's used there comes back to mean no care. I don't care about building up. Slothfulness means it's a no care. I don't mind. Somebody else can do the works. Christians are not allowed to be spectators. We're not allowed to sit by the sidelines and hope someone else will do the work for me. We are called kingdom citizens, workers in the fields. Jesus defines citizenship all throughout the Gospels as workers, as those who are out serving. We sing a song. I want to be a worker for the Lord. A slothful individual cannot sing that song truthfully, honestly, without knowing there's something wrong going on. Not knowing I'm going to be held accountable for these things. I cannot be a spectator. But that's so encouraged by the slothful nature. Slothfulness also promotes this idea of faint-heartedness. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9 says, "He who endures to the end will be saved." Slothfulness promotes this idea of that I can't do it. The race is too far. The end goal is too much. I'm never going to get to it. This feeds into the modern idea of the 10-second attention span. And I bet you're very familiar with that. I've heard it quite a few times. How this current generation just seems, or generations, I'm a part of that too, has this problem with I can't grasp anything that's going to last more than 10 seconds. If it does not have my attention within 10 seconds, I'm done, I'm checked out. I'm not going to grasp what's there for me to take and to hold on to. Public speakers are told, you have but just 30 seconds to get someone's attention. If you don't, you've lost them for the whole time. This is not how a Christian can behave. I have to see things out through the end. I can't be a faint-hearted individual. And lastly here, slothfulness makes us spiritually disinterested. Makes us spiritually disinterested. There we go. Look at Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 7 for just a moment. Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 7. He says, "Wisdom is supreme, so acquire wisdom. Whatever you acquire, acquire with understanding." You have to acquire it. You have to go out. You have to earn it. You have to seek it. Wisdom does not just come nicely into your lap. Wisdom is earned. Wisdom is fought for. Acquire, that's another one of those action words that is not defined by slothfulness. Acquire wisdom, acquire understanding. A slothful individual is spiritually disinterested because it's too hard to go and to learn. I do have to say this about this congregation from my know about it. You guys seem to be very, very interested in spiritual things. I've listened to Mark's podcasts. I know of your yearly Bible readings and how you guys have enveloped that into so much of your worship and so much into your lives. I'm not going to lie, I've borrowed some of those ideas and things trying to help encourage my congregation in these things. We're working on our first yearly Bible class, Bible reading through. And it's a challenge to get through that. I'm so glad you have cultivated that type of characteristic for this church. You are acquiring wisdom at an amazing rate that I am envious of. But it's something you're working on, you're striving for. You're not being slothful with that. But a slothful Christian is one who looks at God's word and sees, wow, that is a thick book. Wow, that is some hard things to grasp and to hold on to. That's a change in my life that's pretty uncomfortable. That's pretty hard for me to do right now. So I'm going to set that verse aside, and I'll come back to it later. And I'll focus all here on the good parts and the easy things. Well, that's not what a Christian can do. You're picking up some of those slothful characteristics. That's making me spiritually disinterested, and that's just not a way that can go. There's a lot of dangers and being a spiritual sloth. And Satan's going to do whatever he can to turn us into that. So I have a few ways, I think, to help us cultivate a nature of what I'll call a nature of zeal. There's a few ways to help us cultivate zeal. Zeal is eagerness. It's that anticipation. It's that growth. It's a fervor for the Lord. I'm trying to help us cultivate that tonight. So there's a few things. First off is that I am responsible to cultivate my zeal. When I'm thinking about slothfulness and combating it first, I have to write down and acknowledge to myself, I am responsible for cultivating my zeal. I cannot expect my parents to cultivate it for me. I cannot expect my friends to cultivate it for me. You've probably heard, those of you who are here home from college, and I see you all over here. It's so good to see you all again. When you get out there, you've been told you have to find your own faith. You have to establish your own faith. The faith of your parents will get you so far, but it's about you building a relationship with God. You are responsible for cultivating your own zeal. I'm responsible for cultivating my own zeal. This is about me. I can't blame anybody else for when I say I can't be motivated for it. I can't blame somebody else for trying to hold me back from pursuing the Lord, especially in our country, where we have protections against somebody doing that. Nobody can hold me back from knowing the Lord, except for me. I alone am responsible for cultivating my own zeal before God. All creation has a zeal for the Lord. Nature screams how powerful and mighty and loving our Lord is. Do you scream it? Do I scream it? Does it shout forth from me and how I live in my actions? This point is all about me. Nobody else can do anything to help truly build me up in my zeal. I can be encouraged and inspired by so many others, but if I'm being that bench warmer, that Christian couch potato, it doesn't matter how many times I'm sitting here at church, no matter how many powerful, wonderful, beautiful hymns I hear, no matter how much powerful preaching is done at me, if I refuse to change, if I refuse to let go of the slothfulness, true zeal will never come to me. I am responsible for cultivating my own zeal. Secondly, I have to develop a strategy to handle temptations. I have to develop a strategy for handling the temptations, which will ruin that spiritual sensitivity that I have. I need to be honest about the things that I watch, that I read, that I see, that I hear, that I visit on the internet. I have to be responsible for all those things. I need to develop a strategy that comes for those. Remember, we've heard all these phrases. Bad company corrupts good morals. You've probably heard plenty of preachers say how dangerous it is to have this little screen in your hands, how easy it is to sit in bed and just watch YouTube videos, when instead I could easily flip open to a different app and read my Bible. When I'm sitting there in the middle of the night and I feel, for us men at least, an urge, there's an itch in the back of my head. Have I made a plan? Have I made a way to put that aside so that it's no longer an issue? I'm not being tempted by it? It's so easy to come in to say, it's not a big deal. I'm not going to be bothered by this thing tonight. There's that slothfulness coming in. How easy it is parents to say, I know my kids, they're going to come and be honest with me about things they're struggling with, things they need help with. I had parents that thought that same way. And I'll tell you, they don't know half the things that I did when they weren't around. Sorry, Mom. She's sitting right there. They don't. Because I was being slothful about it. I was hiding my things away. I was not dealing with temptation correctly because I had not made a plan to handle temptation well. But if you truly are trying to cultivate zeal and get away from slothfulness, you have to develop a way to handle these temptations. And it might be hard. It might hurt. It might be uncomfortable. It might mean that I lose my smartphone for a while and I have to go down low tech to a flip phone. It may be that I don't get a computer in my room or an Xbox system, a PlayStation system in my room, that it's out where everyone else can see it and have access to it, where I'm held accountable to my time and to what's on those devices. Your parents can develop them for you guys. You as parents can develop them for your kids. But you have to build these strategies to deal with temptation. Thirdly, I'm going to say we need to develop and practice the Sabbath principle in your life. Look back at Exodus chapter 20 for just a moment. Exodus chapter 20. And you're going to see what the Lord describes here with this idea of a Sabbath principle. Exodus chapter 20 and verses 8 through 10. He says, remember the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy. For 6 days you may labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath for the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your cattle or the resident foreigner who's in your gates. This is what we call the Sabbath day principle. It is so easy to become a workaholic. It really is. But there are times that I am now left without energy, that I am now left without time in my schedule because I have filled it up with so many things. But I have forgotten to make time for the Lord in my life. The majority of your week, the majority of your time is perfectly fine to be working and doing other things. For 6 days you may labor and do all your work. But plan a seventh. Plan time out. Have time with God. What's your prayer life looking like? What's your reading time in His Word? What does that look like? How about making sure that you are setting your family up with other Christian families to spend time with? That your kids are spending time with other Christian kids? You want to see them really develop zeal and develop strategies to beat temptation off? Being around other individuals of their age, putting yourselves around other Christian families and actually talking about these things, spending good quality time with the Lord's people, that's how you see these things grow. That's how you see slothfulness disappear. Because I'm holding myself accountable to others of not being a sloth. I need to make sure that I am practicing zeal, practicing the Sabbath principle in my life. Fourthly, I got to plan my service to Christ. I have to go and I have to plan my service to God. Just as we give of income every single Sunday, I got to think about what I'm doing in my life and my examples and my actions. Am I planning something good? Am I praying, God, please give me a way to shine my light today? Am I working and making a plan for Christ in my life? You got to accumulate and cultivate zeal through active prayer and plan. And lastly is this, I will find joy when I serve. It's so easy to sit in here and say there's so much pressure on myself, a pressure in serving and doing what is good for the Lord and what's right for Him. There is a lot of pressure, but there doesn't have to be. God is going to reward me when I find joy in serving Him. And that's found when people come up to you and say, what makes you different? Have you ever experienced that? Somebody coming up to you and saying, this world is in such a terrible and tumultuous state. What makes you different? Why can you find joy? Why are you happy? What makes you eager to continue on? Because I am lacking it right now. There is something to be said when that happens because it means you are shining your light. You are being effective Christians. You are that individual, that goalpost, that lamp that people can come to and flock to see and know who God is, who Christ is. I find joy in that. I hope you find joy in that. I find joy in serving, and I believe you'll find it too. Because we all have talents of so many different ways. Yes, maybe yours is not leading singing. Maybe it's not giving powerful prayers, but it might be a shoulder to cry on. It might be the fact that I can paint and do some wonderful things with the gifts and art that God has given to me, the creation gifts, that I can go and I can make something and share it with someone else. When they're in their darkest places, a little bit of joy, a little bit of gift can make all the difference in the world to them. An effective worker for the Lord is not a slothful individual. While they look cute, they look innocent, that's just not the characteristic that defines who I am. Christians are called soldiers, workers. We're not called sloths. Thank you so much for your kind attention tonight. I hope that you have found something tonight to grasp and hold on to help you in your journey, because this is one of those sins that people don't like talking about, don't like feeling that they're being accused of. Hey, my toes got stepped on tonight, and I promise you, if you feel that way, mine have been trampled all night. Because I struggle with these things too. I'm still growing and working through them. I hope that you are able to find some level and nature of zeal to come forth and to make your light shine even brighter every single day. Thank you so very much for your attention.